Sometimes we may already be intelligent in all kinds of worldly knowledge, yet when it comes to sitting in meditation and making the mind stop and become still, it's difficult to do. This is because we have trained our minds to think, imagine, and fabricate about studies, work, and worldly affairs. Through this, we gain wealth and money, which are necessary for our lives, but we still have not yet encountered true happiness. Therefore, the Buddha came to teach us how to find true happiness, because defilements deceive us into thinking that once we obtain something, then there will only be happiness. But worldly happiness must be exchanged for many different things. The little time we have, less than 100 years, gradually disappears day by day, yet we still spend every day running after happiness. Therefore, when we begin to see the disadvantages and dangers, seeing that our life becomes shorter every day, every moment, every second, we will realize that the happiness we struggled to grasp never truly stays. We cannot store happiness away. Once happiness arises, no matter how great it is, it arises, remains briefly, and then passes away. We cannot deposit happiness somewhere and later withdraw it when suffering comes and we no longer want the suffering. When we do not have enough cash to spend, if we have deposited money in the bank, we can withdraw it because we have accumulated a lot. Even when the cash we have is gone, we still have enough to spend because we have stored money, gold, and valuables. This applies to material things, but for mental phenomena, it is not like that. Even suffering, once it arises, cannot be stored away either, and we don't want to keep it anyway. But even though we want to preserve happiness, we cannot preserve it, because feelings of body and mind naturally arise, remain, and pass away. Therefore, we must reflect that human life is truly very short. Sometimes the Buddha compared it to dew on the tip of a blade of grass. Once the sunlight touches it, it immediately dries up. It is that quick, that fast. But while we are still young, it seems long, very long, and as though life only continues growing and prospering. When people become older, around 70 years old, they begin to see that if they truly live to 100 years, only 30 years remain. Most people die around 90 before reaching 100. This means that a person aged 70 may only have around 20 years left, or perhaps just 10 or 15 years. Of course, it is uncertain. Sometimes younger people also pass away before their time in this world. Yet sometimes they depart because of karmic results, leading them to enjoy heavenly merit. It is like the devas, the celestial beings, walking in Tawatingsa, heaven, admiring the flower gardens. One deva descended to be reborn in the human world, lived for 50 years, died, and then returned once again to the celestial garden in the Tawatingsa heaven realm. Only half a day had passed there, yet 50 years had passed in the human world. This is called still having merit remaining, from a deva to a human being, and from a human being back to a deva. There are indeed disciples of the Buddha who accumulated barami, spiritual accumulations, over many lives, alternating between heavenly and human realms, until finally attaining arahantship. But even so, we must not become heedless. When we reflect that human life is so short, not knowing when separation or death will come, we cannot afford to be careless. But recollecting death is not meant to create fear or depression. It is meant to arouse effort, perseverance, and awakening. And awakening itself means non-heedlessness. Therefore, we must keep trying to practice meditation. Especially when our minds are restless, we should stop. Stop thinking, stop imagining, stop mental proliferation, and bring the mind into stillness and peace. In the beginning, no one can make the mind peaceful easily, except for those who have already developed much spiritual accumulations. When they sit in meditation, before long, the mind becomes calm and bright. For example, Venerable Ajahn Rien Waradamo once experienced great restlessness and deep weariness as a lay person. He was sitting on the back of a buffalo herding it, and he felt utterly weary of everything. Then suddenly the mind became peaceful, unified, and completely radiant. This shows that he had already trained in samadhi, concentration, extensively in the past. The accumulated training gathered together and allowed him to see clearly. But if we have not yet trained to that extent, we must continue trying. Perhaps we only have a little samadhi, which we may even have experienced upon as children. For example, while bowing to the Buddha, recollecting the qualities of the Buddha, feeling rapture, joy, and fullness of heart, or having offered alms, or listening to the Dhamma, and sometimes the heart naturally becomes uplifted and fulfilled. Or when attending an ordination ceremony, whether it is our child, relative, or close friend ordaining, we feel deeply joyful in the goodness they are about to cultivate. Wearing the ochre robe, which is carrying the victory banner of the Arahants, and continuing the life of the Buddha's dispensation. Then we feel full and happy inside. This itself is the arising of the quality of samadhi. So we should recollect this image often, even though that merit has already arisen and ceased, but we keep recollecting it again and again. When recollection becomes frequent, then merit also arises frequently. In this way, samadhi develops. Reflection itself can become a cause for samadhi to arise. In today's chaotic society, to enter deeply into samadhi, all the way to the fourth jhana, absorption, requires someone who has already trained extensively before. But in the beginning, even kanika samadhi, just a little concentration, is already good. Simply feeling inwardly joyful and uplifted is enough. When this joy and happiness arises frequently, they become more and more continuous. The heart becomes deeply fulfilled, the body feels light, the mind feels light, and what is called upajara samadhi, access concentration, can arise. There may still be small thoughts appearing, but we continue practicing, cultivating, and reflecting regularly. Eventually, samadhi deepens further. Then, in contemplating the body, we truly see this bodily heap as merely a mass of elements. It is no longer us. There is no being, no person, no self, no me or them. It is simply natural elements breaking apart and dissolving. When the mind directly sees this dissolution through insight knowledge, the heart begins to empty. The emptiness becomes more and more, and immediately enters another dimension of experience. It is a dimension where the mind feels that the fetters binding the heart, the sense of self and identity, are being cut away. The mind reaches a feeling of no self, no identity at all, becoming entirely like empty space, moving towards emptiness, then we will clearly see that this path is truly the path leading to genuine happiness. So we train mainly in this kind of contemplation as the way for samadhi to become firmly established. It saves time and doesn't waste time. Venerable Ajahn Chah said that training oneself to see heaven and hell wastes a great deal of time. He himself had already practiced it and attained it, but after attaining it, he saw that it was not of tremendous benefit. Still, it could be useful for great elders to teach and inspire faith in others, encouraging them to practice. But directly speaking, if one wishes to awaken to the inner Buddha, one must use vipassana, insight, to develop samadhi and wisdom. Therefore, we can practice at home and at work. In fact, if we're able to practice amidst busyness and confusion, it shows that our minds are trained even better than when staying only in peaceful places. Being able to practice in peaceful surroundings is one level, but if we can remain inwardly steady amid chaos and still bring forth samadhi, even occasionally, then this already shows genuine ability, sincerity, and determination in our training. So we must keep persevering and striving, training ourselves to see the truth that the things we perceive externally only appear stable and secure. For example, some countries once appeared extremely stable, possessing the world's strongest economy, attracting many tourists and investors. It seemed as though such prosperity would continue forever, until the end of time. But in reality, external things can all disappear through disasters, storms, floods, wars, and many other calamities. Cities that were once prosperous and flourishing can vanish, decline, and lose their prosperity in a surprisingly short time. Do you see? External things are not enduring, permanent, or truly secure. They are not genuine happiness. Therefore, true happiness from within is something we must train ourselves to cultivate. We may possess wealth, money, and many material assets, but we cannot buy wisdom. It cannot simply be purchased. Even physical health cannot truly be bought with money. We cannot pay to guarantee a perfectly strong and healthy body. Therefore, if we truly want these things, we must cultivate them ourselves. Especially this inner cultivation of meditation cannot be divided and shared with one another. We each must practice it for ourselves. The Buddha said that he was merely the one who points the way, showing the path to those who are lost, uncovering what is concealed, turning upright what has been overturned, guiding those who have lost their way. That is what the Buddha exclaims. But we ourselves must learn. We must possess spiritual accumulations. But even if we already have spiritual accumulations, if there is no one who points out the way, we still would not know where to go. Even if we have the spiritual accumulations to see the Dhamma, know the Dhamma, and attain realization, we still must rely on the teachings of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha to guide and direct us. When the Buddha was still living, he himself directly guided people. Later, the great elder monks learned the Dhamma, realized the Dhamma, understood the Dhamma, and they too became guides pointing out the way. Afterwards, we can also learn from the Dhamma itself by reading Dhamma books, understanding the teachings, and practicing accordingly. In this way, the Dhamma itself becomes our guide. And by walking along that path, we can eventually attain realization as well. Like Venerable Ajahn Mun, he did not really have a teacher guiding him directly. He learned through his practice, through studying texts and scriptures, through knowledge, and through the Dhamma becoming increasingly clear within Samadhi, until he knew the way for himself. This was because he possessed immense spiritual accumulations, that of a great disciple of the Buddha, and in the past he had even aspired towards Buddhahood. Therefore, many of his disciples, when they took birth, were beings whose spiritual accumulations had already matured. More than 100 of them became arahants, possessing psychic attainments and deep meditative absorptions, continuing down to our Venerable Ajahn Chah. Therefore, we are fortunate to have had the opportunity to pay respects to such teachers, to study from them, and to listen to the Dhamma from them. We then bring their teachings to contemplate and to practice, so that we may truly know the Dhamma. This is what it means to abide in heedfulness. The Buddha already taught us, all of you should abide in heedfulness, because life is uncertain. But people always like to say, we still have time. Yet in reality, do you realize that with every breath, our time is gradually decreasing? Everything deteriorates and fades away. This is the three characteristics. Everything constantly decays. They are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. This body, technology, and everything we possess, once the breath ends, everything is gone. Yet while we are still alive, suffering arises due to various conditions because of our attachment and clinging. Suffering exists because of clinging, and suffering continues because of craving. Venerable Ajahn Chah taught this Dhamma teaching. The Buddha taught the three characteristics. All conditioned things are impermanent, unable to remain in the same state, and are not self or belonging to self. Today we may be healthy. Tomorrow we may be lying in a hospital bed. Sometimes we are praised, and sometimes people criticize us. Therefore, the way out is to practice Dhamma, to return and look at the mind, to train in sila, samadhi, panya, morality, concentration, and wisdom, to cultivate our minds so that it can know the mind in time as things arise. This is not about running away from the world. It's not escaping the world, but truly understanding it. When one clearly knows and sees the world, one rises above it. This is called Lokuttara, the supra-mundane. So we should use the time we still have wisely and not live heedlessly. We should recollect death from time to time so that we do not become deluded. We should not become lost in attachment to this and that, but return to training mindfulness, returning awareness back to our mind, observing what sense objects that are fabricating and conditioning our mind. Contemplate until emptiness begins to arise. Continue until the mind becomes still and peaceful. Then samadhi enters the mode of vipassana, that is, true insight and direct seeing. Seeing all things, seeing the body itself, as dissolving away, breaking apart. When this is directly seen by the mind, it will never return to delusion in the same way again. It becomes something stable and certain. We ourselves have already reached this age and this stage of life, so we should strive to train and cultivate ourselves. May all of you prosper, both in worldly life and in the Dhamma. May you grow in blessings.